Hi, I'm Shannon Bennett, and I'm here with Alexandra Hunt, public health researcher, a girls' soccer coach, an advocate for social, racial, economic, and environmental justice, and she was recently running for a PA congressional seat. And you're listening to Matter of Life and Death. Welcome to the podcast. Hey, Alexandra.
Hey, thank you for having me here. It's good to be here.
Thank you for being here. You were running for a PA congressional seat. We've noticed that more and more folks with platforms, more and more politicians are talking about student debt and student debt cancellation. We've seen some of your tweets. It caught our attention and we thought it might be a good idea to have a conversation. So let's dive in. Was student debt a motivator for you running for Congress?
I think the thing that pushed me over the edge was the circumstances of my community and people in Pennsylvania, people in PA3. Are very much impacted by the education system and the way it's set up. And it's set up to cater towards people and young people who are born into wealth rather than people who want to climb the ladder through an educational means. So absolutely. And on top of that, I have student debt and trying to pay it off as a young person starting out on a pretty low wage, despite having 2 degrees. It was very, very stressful before it was put on pause.
You mentioned, or at least in your bio, I was reading about your brother and his learning disability and that being a motivator for you as well. Does that also tie into education being important to you?
Oh, absolutely. And both my parents are teachers. So I was raised with the belief that education is the ladder to opportunity. And so that's how we kind of can understand the world and also how we can figure out what our place is in this world is through education and through learning and through teachers. Both my brother and my parents played a very big role in how I perceive the world and then also what I decided to run on.
Do you mind sharing how much student debt you have?
Don't know the exact amount, but it's over 100,000. I think it's maybe like 113,000, right around there.
Yeah, I'm hovering at 131,000 right now.
Have you been in a time of repayment when you were having to repay that amount?
Yes.
The burden of it is unbelievable. The stress of it is unbelievable. I was running for Congress. I was still working full time. Mm-hmm. And our loan repayments were supposed to restart in January. That was something that was looming over all us debt holders' heads. And I went to my job and I had to advocate for an increase in my salary because I wasn't going to be able to afford life plus student debt repayment. And I think that that lens should draw in a lot more corporations into this fight because it's a built-in wage increase, salary increase that they don't actually have to pay for. The government does.
That's a really good point. And we've seen unions and other organizations kind of join that fight, but I don't think we've seen the greater corporate America get behind that. It's unfortunate. I'm not quite sure why we don't see that. I think on the flip side, we've seen where organizations will have it as a benefit, you know, to kind of lure new talent into positions. I think more and more organizations are doing that, but that's really all I've seen. You know, you spoke of the burden of repayment. I think that's a really important point to highlight as well. In my experience, when we talk about student debt and student debt cancellation, the perception is that we're lazy and we're looking for a handout and we don't want to work. But we're actually folks that actually are feeling the burden. We want to be responsible citizens. It's very stressful. In our last episode, we were talking about the rates of anxiety and suicide and all these things that are going through our minds because it's incredibly stressful. I think the average loan payment is hovering right under $400 a month right now, and that's ridiculous.
That's a really good point that you brought up about mental health, the impacts on mental health, but also that it does lead to suicide ideation and also potential suicide, because one of the unfortunate, successful messaging themes with the New York City taxi protests and union, they were talking about how the debt led to their members actually committing suicide. And it's important to recognize that the stress being under the burden of student debt with no help from anyone isn't about being lazy, but it's about really suffering and struggling.
Where do you think the disconnect is between folks that are pushing for cancellation and pushing for awareness around higher ed financing reform and people that are saying, well, no, if you're going to do that, cancel this too?
I think it's multifaceted. It's one that bears a rhetoric that working people, poor people are just looking for handouts, but they're lazy. That was kind of around before student debt. And this plays into it because who has to take out a student loan? Not the rich, not the people who can afford education, but middle America, working America. I think for impoverished America, it's not even on the table. And that's a whole nother conversation about the lack of job opportunity that they then have. I think that we need to recognize that keeping higher ed is something that can be only afforded by middle or wealthy America. It causes racial disparities within who attends higher education. And so that rhetoric is something that has also been around different racial groups, unfortunately.
Right, right. Agreed. And I think that's really unfortunate too. Something that we try to call attention to is that when you go far back in history and look at who was attending colleges, it was traditionally wealthy white men. These are the people that were getting an education. And the goal of student loans, at least originally, was to encourage more people to study the sciences, engineering, and various science majors, and to kind of open the doors a bit to access. But we're still having an issue of access. No one should be in the kind of debt that we're in for getting a higher education. It just doesn't make any sense. This might be a little redundant, but what would student debt cancellation mean for you?
For me, it would allow me to start seriously thinking about family planning. It would allow me to start saving to buy a house. I was looking at right now, we are combating inflation, some pretty extreme inflation. I think the worst we've seen in over 80 years. And I was looking at the health of U.S. households and it's flatlining. And that is because the average U.S. household has higher liabilities, higher debt, and fewer assets. We don't own homes. We can't really afford to actually own property, which increases the health and wealth of a household. And it's because we are burdened with student debt and younger generations are becoming the biggest generations as older generations die.
I think it's tough too, because I think for the older generations, when they look at us, they're saying, well, I was able to work for a summer and pay off my student debt. And I was able to get a job and paid off right away without sometimes acknowledging we're in a completely different time right now. I think the average student debt holder is what, like 30K, graduating with about 30K in federal student debt. So it's just not the same. It's just not the same.
Yep. I worked all through my educational experience and I have over $100,000 in debt. It's just not enough.
Right. Something I like to highlight too is there are certain programs that don't want you to work while you're attending their program or their school. And so you have to sustain yourself somehow. And so we have a lot of folks that are also using those funds to support themselves. It's interesting. Again, a little redundant maybe, but how has student debt affected your life or the life of your friends and family?
So one of the things that I did on my social media platform was I asked for people to share their student debt stories. And what I found was the impact of student debt is so similar across the board, but we don't talk about it because we feel ashamed for struggling so much when we're kind of gaslit by people who don't have student debt and understand the struggles. Like, you know, you're just lazy and asking for a handout, everyone else is fine, or at least you got to go to college, that sort of dialogue. For me, when I was in repayment, it impacted my groceries and I wasn't able to buy enough groceries to properly feed myself and my dog. And so I was having to choose. I've heard from some people that they were having to choose between groceries, student debt, and menstrual items because those are more expensive. I've heard from some people that they did not feel comfortable dating anyone seriously because they didn't want to share the debt burden and felt very ashamed of that. I've heard people talk about the anxiety that they just had to live with being under student debt and just every single month not quite cutting it, or just watching their bank account go down and down and down to pennies, knowing that another student debt repayment was coming the following month.
It's unreal. What are your thoughts on the Biden administration continuing to extend this pause, but also there's this game of saying, hey, we're going to make an announcement soon. Wait, no, we're not. Wait, we're going to make an announcement. No, we're not. Like that kind of a thing. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's really cool. I think it shows a lack of understanding of the pressure and anxiety that comes from student debt repayment. I feel like I'm saying it again and again, but it is so stressful to live with student debt. And when it was turning back on in January, that it was immediately like, okay, how am I going to tighten my belt this time? And what do I need to shift around? How do I get more uncomfortable so that I can afford this? And also going to my job and being uncomfortable there by asking for a raise. It's just the lack of action and the leading on a whole generation, younger generation of people is really, really cruel.
It is. We can't plan. We can't budget. I mean, when you're talking about people too that have the significant burdens that you and I have, we're talking six figures, student loan debt, right? And for me, maybe 90 or so plus of that is federal. Those are major numbers. That's life changing. And so for you to tell me one month that you're going to make an announcement and then tell me another month that you're, it's a lot. And it's really unfortunate.
It's an emotional roller coaster.
It is. It is. It shows, kind of to piggyback what you were saying, just a lack of understanding, a lack of connection with borrowers. I think there's also this element of, because, you know, Biden has canceled student debt for several groups, but I think it's always presented as if we're being done a favor. And it's kind of like this thing where Biden has canceled how many billions of dollars of student debt in this moment, not acknowledging that the burden we're talking about is a $1 trillion burden. And so billions sound nice, but they're really a small fraction of the overall burden.
Right. And something that makes me get my claws out is when people call it student loan forgiveness. I'm like, what the heck are we being forgiven for? We climbed the education ladder, seeking the opportunity that we were promised in the American dream. Now we're part of the workforce, working our butts off as hard as we can during this looming doomsday that we're facing in this country.
Yeah.
What are we being forgiven for? We're giving, giving, giving. So I can't stand when it's called loan forgiveness and it's painted as I'm being so good to you and you should be grateful for the crumbs.
Exactly. Meanwhile, a lot of the debt that Biden has canceled recently, especially the ones around the PSLF waiver, where they've tried to restructure some of these federal repayment programs, where a lot of these payment programs have been mismanaged over the years. And so to go in and restructure or to cancel debt for groups that it should have already been canceled for, you're not doing us a favor. You're cleaning up. You're cleaning up a mess is what you're doing. I think it was Mitt Romney that called what Biden's doing with student debt cancellation a bribe. He called it like a bribe for voters. I mean, in terms of like polling and how to gain favor, if he were to cancel student debt, do you think that borrowers would show up and vote for him in the next election?
Well, I think he has a really serious problem right now. And that problem is inflation. And I think one way to combat inflation and a potential recession is to cancel student debt, is to do something really, really big quickly to try to close the gap of the cost of living and what people are making. The other thing is to tax rich people, which is a different conversation. But I think President Biden, whether or not he does this out of a bribe or out of the goodness of his heart, I personally do not care. And I think that we voters understand that, and also just whatever gets it done. I mean, we are also holding it over his head saying, we're not going to vote for you if you don't do anything for us.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And it has been nice to see some groups get cancellation, but the greater majority of us are sitting here going, what about me? Don't forget about me. So it's interesting. What advice would you give to your younger self about student debt? Would you do anything differently?
I would. I would do things differently. We are expected to figure out what we want to do pretty much from the age of 17 and then go to college on that path. I graduated college in 3 years and I went straight into a master's program. And I wasn't sure if I was going to get a certificate or a degree that first year. So that first year was funded by a private loan. And then the second year was funded by a federal loan. And so I have both federal and private student loan debt. And that is messy. They do not talk to each other. They do not care about talking to each other. And that's why my monthly payments are so high. So my advice to my younger self would have been, take a breath, figure out what it is that you want, because making mistakes really, really costs you in education. Or not even a mistake, but just like taking time to figure it out. You don't want anything to do with private student loans.
No, you don't. That's a really good point. I've been able to wrangle my federal, but like you said, the private ones are just wild I found them to be very difficult to communicate with, very difficult to negotiate with, less payment term options or less options for repayment. If I were to answer that question, I think I would have said the same thing. I think I would have added just to slow down. You don't have to do the full 4-year program right away. You could take a class here and there, keep working. But that's not how it's sold to us. It really is sold as this shiny package. Come stay here, stay on campus, get the meal plan, buy the book.
Yeah. And it's very much a bubble that I don't think you really accurately understand how to function in the world until after the bubble. And then it's just like a shock to the system.
Yes. And also to your point, 17, 18, what do you know? What do you know at 17, 18? I think there's some that know, like, you know, from birth, they know exactly what they're going to do and they know what path they need to be on. But our brains aren't fully formed until what, 24, 25? And I dare say that I think the banks know that. I don't know about you, but I'm single and dating, and on one of my dating profiles, it's like, tell us something you're passionate about. And I said, student debt cancellation. And I had someone talk to me recently, and it was the very typical, no, you took out a loan, you signed the contract, you should pay it back. And so I'm trying to explain, it's actually not so cut and dry. And so we get into it and he says, well, it's a contract and you should have an attorney review it. And so now we're having a conversation about access. Not everyone has access to an attorney. And 18-year-olds, I'm sorry, they're not well-versed on reviewing contracts. So to that guy, I just want to say, no.
the unmatch or whatever.
It's not going to work out. It's not going to work out. So in terms of student debt, some of us in other conversations have realized that we're the ones that are carrying a debt burden in our family. Do your other family members also share student debt burdens or no?
No. My mother is British and she grew up in the UK and they don't have to pay for education. But one of the things that she thinks, I mean, she thinks a lot of things about the United States, but she thought it was kind of scammy, is that in order for her to get a better paying job as a teacher, she would have to go through the American education system. She would have to pay for it to get a United States teaching license. And even if she's been teaching for, at that point, decades as a very qualified teacher, a good teacher, they make it so that you have to go through their own pipeline. And it's a very expensive pipeline. So she refused to do that. And I think never saw the full potential of her paycheck. My father is older. And so education was not as expensive and doesn't have debt at this point. And then my twin brother, he tried college. And I think he was a semester away from graduating, but it was so hard on him, the college experience. And so he dropped out and doesn't have any debt. So it's just me. But my dad, when I was in repayment, he could tell that I was under so much stress. And he started trying to play the lottery to find some way to pay off student debt. And like, it's just not his personality or his style to gamble at all, but he just didn't know what else to do to try to help me.
Right. My mom, I have a similar story. My mom, so we're also immigrants to the US. And so she, I think, looked into, she was also a teacher for many years. She looked into what, I guess, the equivalent degree would be or something, or how many credits she would need or something. And same thing, realized that it was really expensive and just never did it, and went from being a high school teacher in Jamaica to kind of nannying and babysitting and being a daycare provider, which she also loved. It was very fulfilling. But I think her heart was more so in a more formal teaching environment. So I think that's interesting. And something else we focus on too is the interest. Why charge us interest? If you're going to charge us at all, why is it that the wealthy can pay the sticker price and then middle class, lower class folks are paying interest on it?
To hold us down.
Exactly. Exactly. It's not okay.
No. Very obvious. And we still are struggling so hard to get it overturned and to get people to listen and to understand.
Have you had any unusual experiences while campaigning and talking about student debt?
Yes. I had one woman chase me down the road about my student debt stance. And she was saying, it's always the same arguments of, well, my mom paid off her debt. What about the people who already paid off their debt? What about the people who decided not to go to college? Da, 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 da. It's just so redundant. It misses the big picture of, okay, well, everybody should, education is a human right. And we're kind of sweeping the legs out beneath a whole generation by not properly educating them and not building opportunity, which we are seeing the impact of. And if people paid off their student debt already, it sounds like they are in a different position in the economic status than people who haven't. So good for them. It's not the same situation.
Do you have any thoughts on the Biden administration kicking around the idea of means testing if they were to do some kind of wide scale student debt cancellation at that $10,000 mark, for example? Any thoughts on that?
I think it's the same thing with the delay in taking action and just extending the pause each time. I think it's cruel to means test working and for people who are really counting on it and who have their lives for it.
And I've read one or two articles, too, that suggest that the burden of that, of an additional application process, let's say, because essentially the Department of Education doesn't have access to our IRS filings in terms of doing that means testing. So they won't even really be able to say who's actually making under 150K if that's the number they want to go with, which means an additional application process, more work on the borrower. It stands to delay cancellation. It just doesn't seem to be the more efficient route. Instead of just doing it automatically, that way everyone gets it.
Yep, that's it. Just cancel it all. It's so much easier. Sign the paper, Biden.
Seriously. But back to your dad playing the lottery to try to help. We've heard so many stories like that.
That's just awful. You have people working multiple jobs. I worked multiple jobs when I was in repayment. We're all trying to figure it out. Another piece of my run for Congress was that I worked as a stripper during college. And then I also recently made an OnlyFans. These are all ways that people are turning to. A lot of people are turning towards creating and digital organizing in order to make that extra money. People are like, well, it's not a real job. It still goes into that lazy rhetoric looking for a handout when people are working one, two, three jobs trying to pay all their living expenses.
I mean, that's a conversation we were having before you joined. One of our producers, Emma, who's on the call with us right now, was just talking about all the different things that she's doing. I mean, she's a perfect example of someone that's serious about getting out of debt and is taking on numerous jobs to do that. We did an episode with Jennifer Estine, who was running for a seat in California. And she, too, was talking about being a single mom and working multiple jobs and going to school to become a nurse. And it's like, these people do not sound like the lazy folks that we're talking about. I think it's really important to highlight that.
I don't think these lazy folks exist.
When I was reading your bio, I read that your family was living in the city and there was a violent incident and then you moved to the suburbs, right?
Yes. Yep.
Did you see a difference in your education?
No. So I always went to school where my parents taught, but the experience that I had with the kids in the city who were going to city schools versus the kids in the suburbs who were going to suburban schools was so different. And during my childhood, I can't remember if it was a county step or a statewide step, but they tried to, and this is in secondary education, they tried to close the disparities that were forming between city and suburban public schools. So they were going to take suburban taxes and put them into city schools to raise their level. Well, the suburbs were in an uproar. They went and got their torches and just absolutely not. They felt like they were losing things. It would not have impacted their schools whatsoever. It would have simply helped city schools that are in total disarray in Rochester. And now, especially in Philly, too, I'm much more familiar with the conditions of Philadelphia schools. And it is horrifying to have kids sitting in a classroom without air conditioning in this extreme heat. Sometimes they miss out on school lunch because it's so underfunded. And there was a classroom where the ceiling fell in on them. And it's just like, what are you teaching children that the outside world feels about them, that their country feels about them? It's that we do not care. And that is how that contributes to this escalating climate of violence that we're seeing, is because kids are growing up with nobody cares, nobody's fighting for me, and the government hates me because I need a little bit of extra help.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you get to college and one book is like $500 and you're like, what is happening? Like, do I eat or do I buy this book? It's unreal. I remember selling some of my clothes in college so that we could afford to go out for Chinese food. And if you think about it, that's what, like maybe a $15 meal selling two shirts so you can go out to eat. It's just, it's unfortunate.
Did you work during college?
Good question. On and off. I did a little bit of retail. I did a little bit of posting. And I think it wasn't really until graduate school for me that it clicked how much money I was spending on my education. It really wasn't until then that I think I matured and was more aware and started making smarter choices.
Well, it sounds like what you were living off of was a living stipend included in your student loans.
The leftover. You get a little extra. Yeah.
Which was like 11. Well, for me, it was like 1100 or something that was supposed to stretch over a semester.
Oh, yeah.
I had some Temple University college students. I met with them and they were talking about how the cost of the university has gone up, but it closes the living expense, like stipend leftover amount. And so they can barely afford housing and they can barely afford their meal expenses because they're paying the university fees and then they're paying for those really, really expensive books. And they either have to go take out another loan or really tighten. So even in college, people are struggling before they're in repayment.
Right. That's a really good point. And when I look back, I think I only had two friends that seemed to be operating a little bit differently. I think one of my girlfriends at the time, I think her dad might have been an accountant and she's working here and she's taking the leftovers and she's investing and like, what are you doing? But that was it. I think everyone else was pretty clueless.
Wait, where'd you go to school?
So I went to the University of Pittsburgh up there in the cold. Why? I don't know. It was freezing. And then I went to Westchester University for a graduate program. Where did you go?
I went to University of Richmond. So having money to invest in things, not really having the student debt burden or issue was pretty common in University of Richmond. They had much more affluent backgrounds and I felt like I did not quite mesh with them given that I was there with a pretty generous financial aid package and having to work. And yeah, it was just very different.
The more conversations we have like this, the more we realize how similar our experiences are. And I like the fact that you're highlighting some of the things that we've had to do for money just to survive, just to be able to eat and live. Something that I've been talking about recently is this concept of time poverty, not really having any time for yourself. And it usually affects women, specifically women who are maybe supporting a family. So if you have income generating work and then you have domestic tasks at home that traditionally still women are taking on more than men are, for example, you end up with very little time for yourself. So you are grabbing food as you go. There's no time for relaxing. You're not getting a lot of sleep, you're postponing, you're pushing off medical related appointments. So it ends up affecting your health and your well-being. And especially for folks that don't have a lot of access to resources, it can be really difficult. And I think that goes to the same thing. When you're in debt and you're working like 15 jobs to be able to get by, it's a lot on your system.
And to tie into that, you were mentioning that you're single. I'm also single. And so all of the household tasks and chores fall to the single woman, as well as all of the bills. And women don't make as much in the dollar as men, especially Black women. And so it's penalizing people for not rushing into marriage in order to pay their bills.
That's perfect. I've seen whole TikToks where it's like, do I want companionship or am I just looking for someone to share the capitalistic burden with?
And that's why sugar daddies, sugar mommies are becoming such a big thing. Yeah, because you don't rush into that lifelong relationship, but you still want your bills to be paid because, yeah, they're a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. All things to think about, Alexandra, you're giving me ideas. I keep thinking about your time campaigning and, you know, talking with a lot of folks about student debt. If there's anything you want to share regarding that.
Just that it's so important. It's so important to voters, especially young voters. It draws them in, captures their attention. And I think that any candidate running for office should pay attention to where the energy is. And there's a lot around student debt cancellation. And I also think that corporations should get involved too, because this way they don't have to raise people salaries, which they don't want to do. And it comes out of the government's pocket.
I love that. I've seen where people take the snapshot of the 44 or 45 million people that have federal student debt. And they say, well, that's not really a large portion of America, you know. But what's happening is the ideas are spreading. And so our friends, our family, boyfriends, girlfriends, whatever it is, people are starting to realize, yeah, no, it's a lot. The people that we love are burdened by student debt. So it's actually becoming more and more popular. So thank you for highlighting that. Is there anything that you want to promote, Alexandra?
Well, I am no longer running for office, but I am staying very involved. And so if you want to get involved in local politics or in Philadelphia issues, I'm definitely around and willing to chat with anyone. If you're looking for tips on how to run for office or how to get involved in electoral politics, I'm also here. And from a promotional sense, I think student debt is going to be one of the topics of the summer. And so keep talking about it and cross causing a ruckus.
I like that. And where can the people find you?
I am on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and Facebook. And it is at the Alexandra Hunt for TikTok and Instagram, and trying to get that changed on Twitter as well.
Thank you so much for your time. This has been a fun conversation. I don't know what your political future holds, but if you ever consider running again, we would love it. We love having women like you who are standing for the issues that we care about and using your platform to talk about things like student debt. Thank you so much for that. And come back anytime. Come back and chat with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It was a great conversation. I enjoyed just you sharing your story and being so honest and open about it as well.
Oh my gosh. Thank you.
If you like this episode of Matter of Life and Debt, subscribe and share it with a friend. It really helps people discover us. Matter of Life and Debt is hosted by me, Shanna Bennett, and created by Nikki Nolan. It is produced by Emma Klauber, Talia Malay, and Shanna Bennett. It is edited by Talia Malay and Nikki Nolan. Transcripts and social media writing is done by Emma Klauber. Our theme music was created by F.A. Achman. Visit our website, matteroflifeanddebt.com, where you can listen to more episodes, access transcripts, and get additional context for the subjects you just heard about. Absolutely for free. The website again, matteroflifeanddebt.com. Thanks again for listening.